Hello, welcome to this edition of the Bearcats Blogcast. My name is Scott, joined, as usual, by Chris Baines. How's it going, Chris?
Hey, Scott, I'm doing good. UC is back on track, back getting some notches in the win column. Just need to win out to make a bowl and end the season on a good note heading into 2018. They beat Tulane 17-16 on Saturday in front of a raucous crowd, will look like about 13 people, and they did it by having luck go their way for once with a missed field goal. What were your thoughts on the game, Scott?
Kind of a weird game. It seemed like at parts UC really kind of like was dominating Tulane, and then at the same time it's like they were never really running away with the game,
right?
And Tulane, like, once they started getting their offense going, I was like, oh, here comes one of those games where they just blow it at the end. And then, like, Tulane misses, like, a 30-yard field goal to lose the game. Just kind of like a crazy, like, confluence of events that actually work out in UC's favor for the, like, first time this year. I guess besides Miami. Like, they're two wins over, like, actual teams. come in kind of, like, not really fluky ways, but in ways where you just, like, pulled a rabbit out of their hat twice. And that's a good thing, because it's been like a sucky year so far.
Yeah, and I feel like for the most of the games this year where they've been relatively close, and you know, UC's lost, like, I mean, SMU the week prior to that is a big example of that. I mean, they've done a lot of things right, but a lot of things wrong. And then when it comes down to it, they just do something to shoot themselves on the foot and lose the game. I mean, you could say that, you know, relatively Navy was fairly close. They just would make one or two mistakes on the outside in their contained defense from the cornerbacks and let Navy run outside for 40, 50 yards and just gash them on the ground. But, I mean, against Tulane, they had it seems like a pretty solid game plan. They were finally throwing the ball deep and connecting. The running game was excellent. Jared Doakes had an excellent game. But it still had that feeling like, okay, when is Hayden Moore going to throw that pick six? When is the defense going to completely break down and let Jonathan Banks scamper up the middle for 30, 40, 50 yards for a touchdown with a minute to go? Like, it just had that feeling like we were just kind of waiting for the bottom to drop out, but never really did.
It was more like two, like, not great teams just, like, battling it out. It was like one of them,
you say awful. You can say they're both bad teams. Let's just call it what it is.
It was one of the more, like, evenly matched games of the year. Which, given, like, what we've seen lately with the high level of, like, competition, especially with the Florida schools, like, there was like a nice little change of pace. And it's good to see the team, like, in competitive games the last couple of weeks with SMU and Tulane. And, like, I think you have to give a lot of credit to the defense for playing probably their best game of the season and really, like, containing Tulane. Like, they did give up some big plays, especially, like, kind of late in the game where Tulane, like, converted a third and long and got themselves down into the red zone. But, like, once Tulane got down there, they really couldn't do anything offensively and had to settle for, like, four field goal attempts, with the longest field goal being 37 yards. And a killer, a false start on Tulane. Before they kicked their field goal, which pushed them back to a 36-yard attempt that their kicker shanked.
Yeah, and I think I agree. I was definitely most impressed with the defense. I mean, Tulane, they're not a very good team. They are right around where UC is from an S&P Plus standpoint, both offensively and defensively, but they skew a little more towards the offense. And the reason for that is their funky option type of offense, sort of like the offense that Rich Rod likes to run over in Arizona. They've got, you know, the quarterback out of the shotgun who has the option to either throw it or, you know, take a crease on the outside and with another option to pitch it to the running back. And, you know, that was the kind of thing that killed Cincinnati against Navy. But for the most part, to your point, I mean, pretty much contained Tulane in most facets. I mean, they only had 139 yards on the ground. They only had 196 through the air. They only allowed 16 points. They, I guess they learned from their mistakes against Navy. And, you know, while Navy's triple option and Tulane's option are different, I mean, there's still similar concepts that are there. And the defense played great. No sacks, but they had contained, and they did their job. And, yeah, I mean, to your point earlier, it's kind of nice that, you know, UC is kind of going up a team where we know they're pretty similar in terms of, you know, talent and coaching and that kind of stuff. And the Bearcats did come out on top.
Like, to your point on the running game, like, Banks had that long run, the 50-yard run for their first touchdown, their only touchdown. And that was pretty much, like, it for on the ground for Tulane. Like, they did have 130 yards total, but it came at the expense of, like, 34 more carries. Like,
right.
Like, they averaged under 4 yards a carry. And, like, they put Tulane behind the chains the whole entire game. And Banks played pretty well. That was the best I've seen him play, just, like, consistently. And just, like...
Wait, are you... hold on. Are you saying you've seen Tulane play a football game before this season? Or before this game on Saturday?
They played South Florida on TV.
Oh, okay. I didn't watch that, but... Okay, go on.
That was pretty much the end of my point.
Like, no, Banks
played
fine.
Pretty well, and they shut down Hilliard, who, like, could be, like, one of the all-team, all-conference running backs. Like, it was a pretty good showing, like, overall, and, like, a giant game for Perry Young. 3 tackles for a loss and 10 tackles overall. Just a nice showing, and a good bounce back after that SMU game could have really deflated the season.
Yeah, and what's most encouraging is that, you know, UC comes up next. They've got Temple tomorrow night. They've got East Carolina and UConn. You know, teams that are fairly solid offensively, but shouldn't necessarily scare Cincinnati like Navy did, or like South Florida or Central Florida or SMU. Like, Tulane was a solid offensive team, and the Bearcats pretty much handled them comfortably on defense. I don't see how this defense gets completely thrashed in the next 3 games like they were the previous 3. And I think that's what's probably most encouraging about coming out of this game. Also encouraging, I thought, I mean, Hayden Moore. I mean, I know we've all been kind of down on him all season, but that was a well-managed game by him. I mean, he was hitting his deep balls. He still staring at his first option in the passing attack. Wasn't really using his checkdowns, but I mean, completed 66% of his passes, 248 and a touchdown. Had 2 long passes that he completed. You know, was able to stretch the field consistently for the first time all season, which definitely helped out the running game. Overall, great balance on offense. It was a very, very solid. I thought Denbrock had a well called game, and you know, I don't think the offense is going to face a tough defense the rest of the way. So hopefully, we see a repeat performance in the next 3 weeks.
I guess the biggest concern would be how much the offense kind of like went in the tank the fourth quarter. Or, like, they just completely stalled out and gave Tulane chance after chance to come back in the game. Like,
yeah.
Like, overall, like, more, like you said, like, very consistent. And he had a nice little game on the ground, too, which is his running the past few weeks has been, like, pretty impressive, because I don't think any of us really thought that he had that in him. And he's been, like, such a big boost to the rushing attack. It's really taken, like, some of the pressure off the backs. And then, like, the backs have come along, too. Like, Doak's had another monster game, like, 149 yards. And, like, even, like, Boone had an okay game. And, like, they just don't give Warren any carries, which I think is kind of interesting. Like, Doak's just, like, a monster game. And, like, the offense, for the most part, was better. It's just like their lack of consistency. Like that'd be the only thing I'm really worried about with the last like three games in the push for bowl eligibility. Is like they don't really finish drives. And
yeah.
And like they at this point they just aren't. Even with like the three like the two very bad teams they play in like a bad Temple team. So like it's gonna be interesting. Like at least after that game, we can come away with optimism. Like one of the first times this season, at least the first time since like September.
Yeah, and that's the thing is that this team, this offense is gonna this season is going to be best between the 20s. They just don't. When you're down by the red zone, everything condenses to the point where you need to make as a quarterback really precise, accurate decisions. Like if your number one receiver is covered, you have to quickly find that number two or number three option. And things condense so quickly that the windows close so much more that I don't know if Hayden Moore is really capable of doing that. Unless they like roll him out of the pocket and do something funky to kind of get some misdirection there. Maybe that happens next year, but as far as like what the offense is capable of doing, I mean, it's still the weakness on this team, but if the defense can keep teams within 20 points going forward, I mean, UC definitely has the offense to at least win the closer games. Temple coming up, they have an S&P Plus rating of 53rd defensively, which totally makes sense for Temple. East Carolina then is 130th, so last, and UConn is 127. So Temple's going to be the biggest test tomorrow night, but they get Temple at home. Temple has a multitude of weaknesses on their own end, especially offensively. So if they can get by Temple and they can win that game, the offense shouldn't have any problems the rest of the way. Pending Hayden Moore doesn't, go into, Darth Hayden and start throwing pick sixes all over the place.
You wouldn't think so, at least. Like you'd hope that they would be able to handle UConn and Temple. Like, neither of, like, who get any stops defensively. So, like, I guess it is a positive.
Right.
Just, like, looking through some of, like, the box scores for those two teams. Like, not really a whole lot to be completely worried about. But, like, UConn and Temple are both, like, not UConn. UConn and East Carolina both shut down a couple of teams, which I guess would be kind of worrisome. Like, is UC as bad as BYU? Like, we hope not. Is UC as bad as Tulsa? Hopefully not. Like, I think there's like a 35% chance they could win out and go to a bowl game. Like, what do you think before we dive deeper into
the Yeah. I think that's probably about right. I think right now Temple is the biggest test, right? Because I feel like they were favored against Tulsa by what? No, they were dogs. They were dogs by about 6.5 points or something like that. If they beat Temple tomorrow night, I gotta figure they're gonna be favored. I mean, at least against UConn because they give them at home, and then hopefully. They get East Carolina on the road, so hopefully they're favored then. They'll definitely be favored against UConn. I think around 35% is probably good for their chance to win out. If they beat Temple, I think that thing climbs north of 50. Because when you're looking at momentum in this case, I mean, you beat Tulane, you beat Temple, your defense is playing really well, your offense isn't sputtering as much as it used to, and you're playing two of the worst defenses in college football. I mean, I don't see a reason why UC wouldn't be favored in both of those games down the stretch.
Yeah, definitely.
But I mean, it just all hinges on Temple.
Yeah, like this is the key game. Because if like they're 3-7, then like the questions come in, like, oh, what are you even playing for down the stretch? It's like you could say that with the other two teams as well. East Carolina,
right?
East Carolina isn't going to make a bowl game. UConn's not going to make a bowl game. So at least like winning this game against Temple, a major key, because you really don't want to like play the string and have a senior day against UConn where there's like 18 people in the stands, where there's a Tulsa, where there's a Tulane crowd in the stands.
Oh boy.
Where,
yeah.
Announced as 20,000, which was even like sadder.
They were extremely, extremely generous.
Yeah, it was 20,000 of 33,000, and there was what, like maybe like 10,000 people there. But
yeah,
let's dive into Temple. They've been playing pretty decently lately. The Temple Owls, a tough loss to Army. A couple weeks ago, they lost in overtime when they missed a field goal. Then last week, they pretty much just dominated Navy. Like, ever since they made the quarterback change to Frank, I believe his name is Newtile. I don't know. That's how it's spelled. That's how I'm pronouncing it. Like, they've been much more consistent, especially offensively. And they're just going to make this game really tough. Like, anytime you're facing a quarterback who like comes off a 4-touchdown game, like, you do have to worry, especially since UC's defense hasn't been, like, that amazing this season. And Temple still has Armstead. It has the makings of a bit of a low-scoring slog kind of game. At least that's the impression I'm getting from this one.
Yeah, and them beating Navy is a little concerning, especially coming into this game. But, I mean, we saw what UC was able to do against Navy. I mean, they had their best offensive game of the season against Navy. And Navy ranks 105th in S&P Plus in defense, so their defense isn't that good to the point where, you know, a Temple quarterback throwing for 4 touchdowns probably isn't especially surprising. Even considering the fact that, you know, Hayden Moore kind of did something similar to them earlier in the season, I don't know, Scott. I just don't trust Temple's offense. I mean, they made the quarterback change, which is fine, and obviously it's doing well for them. But they still, I don't know, they're still one of the worst offensive teams in the country. I still feel like defensively UC has better talent, and they played a tougher schedule. I don't know. I mean, UC is a 2.5-point dog, which makes perfect sense considering the records, but I mean, they get Temple at night. They got a little momentum behind them. I still think Cincinnati wins, maybe because I need them to win. Everyone needs them to win, but I just don't trust Temple. I just don't.
Yeah, I don't blame you, because it hits really hard to trust either one of these teams. Like, outside of the loss to UConn, which is really the most inexplicable loss, like, these two teams have. Like, there's really not, like, a ton of bad losses. Like, UC's, like, worst loss, just by the computer, like, power rankings, is Navy. And Temple's worst loss outside of UConn is Army, who is, like, a top 50 team. So, like, not really terrible, but I don't know, like, it's just going to be a really, like, kind of interesting game. Like, I'd be surprised if it was fun to watch. It just seems like one of those games where it's going to be Punt City. And whoever ends up with, like, the better field position, like, really is going to have, really going to thrive. And turnovers, as always, are a gigantic team, or gigantic thing with this team, because if the Bearcats don't turn it over, like they really didn't against Tulane, the offense is a lot better. And, like, when they turn the ball over, like, their defense isn't good enough to, it's like, to really hold people down. And eventually, at some point, it seems like the defense just kind of, like, fades a bit. And it's like they have a lead. It's, like, one thing, like, you can absorb some of that. But, like, if you're trailing, it just all adds up. And we've seen with the blowouts this season.
Yep. Yeah, I think you're right. This is going to be a slugfest. I mean, Cincinnati ranks last in the conference in scoring at 20 points per game. Temple is a notch ahead of them at 11th out of 12th with 22 points per game. The over-under is 47 points, which seems a tad high. I think it comes down to kind of essentially the same kind of things that Temple did. I mean, the last couple of possessions, which hopefully they go Cincinnati's way again, but it's just it's gonna be a hard one to watch. I mean, we're gonna need fans of the game. This has to be a 30,000 plus game. But I don't envy any of the people who will have to witness whatever's going to be going on Friday night.
Yeah, I can't imagine it's going to be like two rockets of a crowd.
Right.
Like, we knew the home schedule was like kind of like garbage this season, but it really hasn't like turned out any real interesting way. Like a 4-5 Temple team, like a right now 3-6 UConn team is probably going to be 3-8. It just does not make for like a reason for fans to come out, which is like kind of disappointing for the players, like since a lot of them are having their last couple of games. And like, it's not even like Temple and UConn are like fun to watch bad. Like, we already know what Temple is.
Right.
So, yeah, it's gonna be something.
Like, it's gonna be something. It will be a football game. I mean, that is one thing. We know for certain it will be a football game. It will be an eye clawing rock fight. But I mean, the one thing you have to hope for is that, you know, Temple's 53rd ranked offense, or I'm sorry, defense is kind of skewed by the schedule a little bit, skewed by the teams they played. I mean, when you're coming off of weeks where you played, I mean, you had Navy last week, but your three prior weeks were Army, UConn, and ECU. I mean, that's going to skew your schedule a little bit, especially when you got Nova and UMass scattered in there as well. You got to hope that Cincinnati is to the point where the offense finally gets what they're supposed to be doing. And, you know, they can replicate the kind of efficiency that they showed against Tulane last week, and they can build off of the fact that, you know, they're going to be at home on a week, on a Friday night, on a short week, and Temple has to come into a raucous Nipper Stadium. And then at the same time, you know, the defense plays their normal, reckless ways. So in that sense, I mean, if UC kind of keeps building off of that momentum, I could see the Bearcats, you know, putting a few more touchdowns on the board than they did last week. But at the same time, you just never know what you're going to get out of the offense. I mean, I have no problem with the defense. I think the defense is going to hold Temple down to like maybe a couple of touchdowns, maybe three. The offense is where it's just still a huge head scratcher, because, you know, we were coming out of the Navy game a while ago, and you know, Hayden Moore had thrown for a few touchdowns. He had one of his best games of the season. And then everything just went south again, you know, as we dove deeper into conference play. Like, is that same thing going to happen tomorrow night? Or is he going to have a similar performance? Is the offensive line going to have gaping holes for the running backs? Are the running backs going to see those holes and exploit them? Are the receivers going to continue to catch every pass thrown their way? I have no idea.
I think this really is contingent on the running game. Like, as you mentioned,
it is, yeah.
Temple's played the two academies the last couple of weeks, and they've pretty much done a really solid job on the ground, like shutting those teams down on the ground, especially Navy. So, if like you can't get the running game going, that just makes your whole offense like pretty much tied up in whatever Hayden Moore can give you. And like, it's not all his fault, because the offensive line, like, he doesn't really let you throw deep a ton. And if, like, you end up behind the sticks, like, you're kind of in trouble against anybody.
Mm-hmm.
Like, so it's, like, gives off kind of, like, the same vibe as, like, some of our games from earlier in the season. Like, maybe, like, the Marshall game. Or even, like, the Miami game. Where, like, Miami's offense is in great shakes. Okay. And, like, Temple is just so hard to read, because they've made a quarterback switch so late in the season. And, like, while, like, their quarterbacks had really good, like, stats, like, who knows, like, if he's going to keep it up. It's kind of a really hard game to predict. I guess we can see that with a 2.5-point spread. It's, like, pretty much almost a toss-up. So, I don't know, just like really hard to get a read on this one. It's like whoever scores 20 is going to be really happy.
Yeah, and that's the thing is like is Frank Neutile, I don't know however the hell you pronounce him earlier. Yeah, I mean he's had great games the last couple of weeks. You know, 20 of 29 for a touchdown and 290 against Army, 22 of 30 for 289 and 4 touchdowns against Navy. But I mean Army ranks 112th in defense and Navy ranks 105th out of 130 in defense. Like, is that really the litmus test you want to use of a quarterback? You know, going into this game, I mean. Unfortunately, he was thrown into the season way later than when he was going to face like more tough defenses like Houston and South Florida and Notre Dame and all that kind of stuff. But huge caveats on those numbers is what I'm saying. Like, maybe he does something similar on Friday night, but maybe he flames out against a much better Cincinnati defense than what he's faced the last couple of weeks. Like, I don't know.
That's not like UC's defense is ranked like in the top 40. Like their defense,
they're not. Sure, but they're better than Army and Navy.
Yeah, at least you would hope so, especially at home.
Right. And that's the thing is like the problem like this whole season is the UC schedule has completely skewed all of the numbers. I mean, when you're playing a schedule that includes, you know, Navy, then Marshall, then Central Florida, then South Florida, then SMU. I mean, those are going to kill your defensive numbers just because those teams are all great offensively. I'll be curious what it looks like at the end of the season once, you know, we get through the stretch of Temple, ECU, and UConn, you know, the teams that are a little lighter on offense.
Yeah, like one thing, like whenever we do our season review, it's going to be interesting to go back and look and see just like how some of these teams that seemed like they were almost like, oh, these are the games you should definitely win, like Miami. Like ends up being like a pretty solid team. Like Marshall ends up being a ton
better very good
than anybody oh, yeah. really thought they would be. Like they're a very competitive team, like, nearly top 50 in the S&P. And like of course like the Florida schools are, you know, really good. Like it's kind of interesting to like go back and look through that. But like and Temple hasn't been very great this season. They've been really up and down. Like another thing, it makes it really hard to get a read on Temple because we've seen them play like Houston close, then like they just lose to UConn, then they make a quarterback switch and play like the Army's been pretty good. They're 7-2. Like they lose that game in overtime, and then they kind of like throttle Navy. It's like yeah. Like, who really knows? Like, this league is kind of ridiculous, in a way. So, I don't know. It's, like, really hard to make predictions for a game like this, where both teams are kind of on even ground. And I really don't know. I don't know who's going to win. What's your prediction, Chris?
Yeah, and that's kind of the problem, right, is that, like, there's so much disparity between the Central Floridas and South Floridas in this division, and then the Temples, UConn's, UCs, and East Carolinas, that it's, like, oh, you get throttled by Central Florida, but hey, everybody gets throttled by Central Florida. Like, does that make you a bad football team? No, it just means you're one of 100 teams in college football that can't run with Central Florida. But it's like UC hasn't played any of the bad teams in the division yet, and Temple split against ECU and UConn. So it's so hard to gauge. I still say that, I mean, UC, again, they're a 2.5-point dog. I think they'll win by a field goal or 4 points, 3 to 4 points. I'll say something like 24-20.
I'm going to ride the positivity train with you. I'll guess 20 to 14 UC wins.
Okay.
I think we know, definitely know, whoever loses this game is going to miss a bowl game. Like, while Temple is 4-5, their next game is against Central Florida, so they're going to get destroyed. And that will be their 7th loss, knocking them out of the picture. Obviously, if UC loses, that would be their 7th loss, knocking them out of the picture. Like it's a pretty important game for both teams. If they want to make a bowl game. If they don't care about making a bowl game, like it would be just like every other game.
Right. Yeah, and that's another thing is, I mean, when you talk about the mindset around the program right now, like, I mean, you listen to Fickell every single week in his press conferences, especially during the 5-game losing streak. He's constantly said, it's been hard to look at the players in the eyes and say, yeah, you know, you're doing everything right, you're doing everything we're asking of you, and it's still not good enough to win. Yeah, I feel so bad for him because he has had to say that week after week after week, and then he finally gets a win that was, you know, shoestring close, but he was able to look his players in the face and say, hey, yeah, this is what you've been working on, working towards since January. Let's keep working on that. See what you, this is what can happen when you put in those hours in the cold and the mud in January. And that's the kind of mentality that winning programs have. And hopefully he can use that kind of mentality to build into another win this week and then two more after that. I think that's going to be a big factor. If they had lost against Tulane, I don't know if there's a chance they can win against Temple. But I think just because of what this team has gone through for the better part of a month and a half and then beating a Tulane close on the road in a game they probably should have lost, I think that swings things. I think that I don't think UC is going to dominate anybody on the back half of the schedule, but I think they're going to pull out the next three games.
Yeah, it's good to like that we actually have hope that they can do that now. Now that they've made it through like their grueling like gauntlet they've gone through, like just gotten one win. Like as you said, like that one win just makes such a big, big difference, like mentality wise, because like when you just keep getting kicked in the dirt, like it just sucks and it feels like you're never gonna get up. Like once you finally get up and like shake yourself off, like nobody down the stretch is like so good that you'd be like, oh man, like this is gonna be a tough game.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and like the best unit they face is Temple's defense. Like if they can survive Temple's defense, like they should be ready for whatever they get from East Carolina, which is probably who the hell knows with that game. It just seems
yeah,
like
the hell knows.
That would be a shootout. And I guess the same thing with UConn. Like, but neither one of those teams play defense, and they only play offense. So whatever happens in those games will rest with whatever UC's defense can do.
Right.
But like, this is a huge test for the offense, and like we've seen them play better against SMU. We saw them play pretty well for the most part, I guess, against Tulane. But like it's time for them to really like lock this one down. But, like we need the best effort of the season from the whole team.
Yep.
Because they can't afford to miss too many chances, and like playing the bowl game would just be fun.
Well, yeah, the bowl game is huge, right? Because that's 15 extra practices. That's 15 extra practices, not just for the coaching staff, but like the players. I mean, all the freshmen that have been playing this season. I mean, that you get those extra practices to continue to, you know, master your craft. I mean, that builds so much momentum going into 2018 when we really expect the program to make that huge turnaround. Like, I mean, just from today, I think this team should win about at least seven or eight games next year. I'd feel much more confident about that if they got that bowl game and then they got those extra practices as well. So yeah, it's huge. I mean, they have to win out, and I think that's also kind of going into my prediction as well. Like if Cincinnati was already out of it, like if they were 2-7, they lost last week, I don't think I wouldn't have predicted them to beat Temple, but part of me is just like, yeah, they have to win, so I should probably predict them to win. I will help will them to win.
And like they have to win one of these home games. Their only home win this season can't be Austin Peay.
Oh God.
Like that would just be sad.
That would be the worst. Okay. Yeah, so go Bearcats. Hopefully they beat Temple tomorrow night, and hopefully we can still kind of keep riding the positivity train going into the rest of the season.
Yeah, let's hope so. It's a lot more fun that way.
Yeah.
Let's run through the league real quick. Like catching up on last week, a lot of blowouts. Memphis went on the road and blew out Tulsa 41-14. Houston blew out East Carolina 52-27. USF 37, UConn 20. The biggest game of the week was UCF 31-24 over SMU.
Mm-hmm.
A good showing for SMU. Like they ended up being like pretty solid. And with the win, UCF still stays at 18 in the college football playoff rankings, which kind of sucks because I think they deserve better. This league just gets like no respect from the polls.
Or at least they're getting screwed. Oh yeah. Oh, Central Florida is like so getting the shaft. I mean, when you look at like Central Florida and the way, I mean, the problem with Central Florida is that they don't have a marquee win on their schedule. I mean, Memphis to an extent because of their only ranked win, but Memphis was what, like 23rd or 22nd when they beat them. And the problem is that they just don't have, their non-conference schedule was Florida, FIU, Maryland, and Maine. Because the Georgia Tech game got canceled. But even if you include that one, I mean, they don't have a top 10 or 15 win to really bolster that. I mean, they're definitely one of the best teams in the country, but the problem is the committee looks at strength of schedule and Central Florida just doesn't have it. I mean, that's more of an indictment on the system than the actual committee that's judging them every week, but, like, that just is what it is.
And it sucks for them, like, losing that chance just to beat Georgia Tech, which it seems like they definitely would.
Yeah.
They're really good. Like, that's going to hurt them, and, like, I don't really understand why they wouldn't move up over some of these teams that, like, are just, like, straight up haven't been good lately. Like, it seems like they're better than, like, Virginia Tech, who just got killed at Miami, and Mississippi State, who just barely survived UMass. Like, maybe, like, you don't move them up over, like, Oklahoma State or, like, Penn State. Like, they're definitely, like, a top 15 team. And, like, for them to stay 18, like, 2 weeks in a row over, under, like, a bunch of these two-loss teams, it's kind of just, like, screams a bit of disrespect. Especially, like, when you look further down, like, Memphis moved up a little bit. They moved up one spot. Like, so, like, I don't know. That's, like, I think this is the highest group of five team has ever been ranked after the second week of the polls. Like, maybe they'll have a chance to end up in the top 15 overall. But like, I don't know. It seems like they should be getting more respect because that team is just really good. Like, and not blowing out SMU, like, probably cost them that because I doubt the committee thinks SMU is, like, great shakes.
Yeah, the couple of the problems there is that, like, A, they're ranked way lower than what the coaches and AP poll have them. Like, the AP has them at 14, the coaches have them at 12. They're sitting there at 18. And B, to your point, they beat a respectable SMU team that's probably going to win 8 or 9 games this season, and they didn't move an inch. They just sat there at 18 while other teams around them moved. And then C, look at Wisconsin. Like, Wisconsin basically is eighth just by being in the Big Ten and playing teams that play other really good teams. But their schedule themselves includes Utah State, FAU, BYU, Northwestern, Nebraska, Purdue, Maryland, Illinois, Indiana. Have they even played a ranked team this year? I didn't even look at their schedule. They have not played a ranked team this year, and they will play all of one this coming Saturday against Iowa. Then they have Michigan and Minnesota, and then the Big Ten championship game. Like, the only reason they're ranked higher than Central Florida is because they just happen to be in the Big Ten. Like, Central Florida should be, like, 9th or 10th, and Wisconsin should be, like, one or two spots behind them. But they're not, and it makes no sense.
Yeah, it really doesn't. Like, I don't know. Like, even, like, all the numbers, like, the computer numbers say, like, how much better UCF is than a lot of these, like, two-loss teams that they're behind. It just kind of sucks for them. Because I think they definitely deserve better. But of course, like, they'll just, like, go out and lose this week. And then, like, a ruin the world.
Yeah, that's a moot point, yeah. So.
But they put out the rankings again this week. It was I thought it was disappointing they didn't move up. Especially because they're behind Virginia Tech, like I said, who got blown out. And
right.
Mississippi State, who really struggled. Even, like, Oklahoma State, like, got blown out. And, like, so did, and Penn State lost. Like, maybe they wouldn't move up that high, but I don't know. It seems like all these other teams, like, a giant boost for USC, a giant boost for Michigan State. And then, like, nothing for UCF.
And that's the thing, is like, it's one thing if you just like slot them at 18th to start, but they won. Like, why wouldn't you move them up at least a couple of spots? Like, here's every team that's ahead of them: Virginia Tech, Mississippi State, Oklahoma, Penn State, and Iowa State, or Ohio State, all lost. Like, all five of them lost. Why wouldn't you move a couple of those below Central Florida? I don't get that, but whatever. It's a problem with the system. They need to, like, I think they're, between this and the BCS, I love the playoff system a lot more, just because it takes into account, you know, strength of schedule and, you know, other factors at play. But maybe they're skewing towards strength of schedule a little too much and not really looking at some of the more deeper analytics of the team. Like, Central Florida, I think in the S&P Plus rankings, is like 8th. Like 6th, 7th, or 8th, like way up there. Part of that is, yeah, they're blowing out teams.
They're 5th.
Oh, go ahead.
They're 5th.
Okay. So, yeah, part of that is, like, they're blowing out teams, but, I mean, you can only play who you can play. Like, it's not their fault that they play in a conference that, you know, or in a division even, that, you know, has, you know, UC, UConn, East Carolina, and Temple, like, you know, four of some of the lowest-ranked teams in college football. And I don't know. I mean, at some point, the committee has to look at it and say, hey, I mean, we want to look at strength of schedule, and strength of schedule is important, but at the same time, I mean, look at what this team is doing to other teams. And, I mean, their analytics prove that they're one of the best in the country. They should be at least in the top 10.
South Florida, not even ranked still. Like, with all these 6-3 teams in the poll, their schedule was garbage. Like, they're definitely a top 25 team in the country, and they're not even ranked.
Especially because the coaches poll and the AP poll has them both ranked in the top 25, almost the top 20. Like, that makes no sense.
It doesn't.
It's a strength of schedule problem. That's the problem. I mean, until they play Central Florida, they're probably not going to crest in the top 25.
It's like, you need to get, like, fortunate and beat somebody like Houston did a couple years ago when they beat a couple of big name opponents to really get any respect, because it doesn't matter how good the AAC is. Like, they just don't care. I mean, they're not going to give anybody, like, any kind of boost for being in this league. Which is, like, stupid, because it's not like the Big Ten West is any good. And, like, Wisconsin's a top 10 team. Like, I don't know. It doesn't matter. It's bothersome.
Yeah, I know. The problem is if you turn over the rankings to a committee, there's going to be some human bias that's at play. I mean, whether or not they want to admit it, whether or not they even know they're doing it, there's going to be a little bit of human bias. I mean, that's one of the downside of changing from the 100% BCS computer rankings to integrating more the human element, is that there's going to be a little bit of bias there, and that's what we're seeing with Wisconsin. My point is that, why don't you add more analytics to your formula and look at some of those before just looking at straight strengths of schedule? Like, I don't know. I think the system now is better than what it was before. They just need to still make some improvements.
Yeah, I think that's definitely true. And UCF, they'll have some chances. Like, they'll play USF to close the season, and then they get Memphis in the title game. It's like, at least they'll have a couple of big chances to, like, put some big wins on the board if they can make it that far. Like, they could easily lose to USF and not be in the discussion, period.
Well, that's the problem, is like, they started out so low at 18, that they immediately had no shot at the top four.
Oh, I mean, definitely not. I just would like to see them ranked, like, maybe the top 15 at some point.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, really, I would have hoped that they would have started out at 11 or 12, which I think was appropriate considering everybody else had them there. And then give them a puncher shot at climbing up into the top four. I mean, who knows if they would have gotten there, but they basically they basically count the G5 out of the race, like, before it even started, and that's the problem. I mean, Central Florida's probably going to get that Access Bowl. They're probably going to face, like, Washington, Wisconsin, or Miami or something like that, and they might win. They probably will win. Who knows? I guess depending on if Scott Frost is still there to coach the bowl game, but, I mean, does anyone think that Central Florida is going to get blown out by anyone in that top 10 besides, like, Georgia or Alabama? I mean, I think they have a puncher's shot at beating any of those teams besides those top two.
Yeah, I do too. Maybe Clemson. I think Clemson. Would be
Clemson,
like
yeah.
Only team that I think would really give them a lot of fits because they're so good on defense. Like if UCF played Notre Dame, it seems like Notre Dame would definitely be favored, but nobody would be shocked if UCF beat them. Same with like Oklahoma or TCU or even like Miami. Or Wisconsin. It just seems like this version of UCF is definitely on that ground. And like we saw Houston right. play Florida State and they like kicked Florida State's ass. Like I think this team is like kind of on par where that Houston team was. I just think like the bias against like group of five teams is like so big. So even if you're a top 25 like preseason top 25 team like USF was. Like, they lost once on a kind of a fluke game to, like, a solid Houston team. It's not like Houston is, like, UConn. And, like, they just don't even get ranked. So, like, I don't even know what group of five teams can do besides, like, whatever Bronco Mendenhall said a couple of years ago where they have to go, like, undefeated, like, 3 years in a row to, like, end up in the top four. Like, you're just, there's a glass ceiling and nobody's going to break it unless you have sustained, like, unprecedented excellence.
Yeah, and that's the problem is that, like, a lot of where you're ranked to start the season depends on where you left off the season prior. And in 2015, Tom Herman led them to, you know, a 13-1 win season with a win over Florida State, like, to your point. And then they started off the following season in the top 10. If Scott Frost leaves this year, I don't know if Central Florida is going to start in the top 10, probably top 25, but just due to the turnover in this conference, after three seasons, your coach is likely gone if he has a lot of success like Scott Frost has had. And then you run into the issue of, well, now we can't build off of that momentum to get back into the top 10 and fight for that top four spot.
And like the margin of errors is so great. Cause you can't, you can't lose for one. But, like, you also can't win, like, by under 30. Or it's like, oh, what's wrong with them? I guess they're not that great. Strength of schedule. And, like, you get penalized even more.
And that's part of it, is, like, if they're using strength of schedule, I like to understand the kind of analytics that they're using to actually determine that schedule strength. Like, because based on the most sophisticated analytics that I've seen, is that S&P Plus stuff, that has Central Florida ranked in the top five. Several metrics, yet I don't know what the hell the committee is using. Like, it goes back to my point. Like, I like the fact that there's a human element there. I like the fact that there's debate. I like the fact that you've got pretty smart folks in the room determining these rankings. And I think for the most part, they did a nice job. Like, for example, they immediately put Notre Dame in the top four. That was 100% due. But then they do funky stuff, like add that with the G5 bias by putting Central Florida way down in the top 25 when every metric has them, you know, much higher. So it's just, I don't know.
It's definitely pretty frustrating being a fan in this league. Like, we see it in basketball every year. Like, the AAC teams just get continually hammered, like, fairly or unfairly. let's move on to this week. UCF, they play UConn. They're a 39-point favorite. Over under 64 with them being a 39-point favorite. Which I guess everybody thinks they'll just win like 40-0. Do you think they'll win 40-0? Like, that's an incredible spread. 39 points.
Yeah, that's UConn's got is probably good for at least a couple of garbage touchdowns, right? I mean, that's got to be the largest spread Central Florida's had this season, right? 39 points.
It's
It's gonna be some kind of record.
Yeah, it's gonna be the largest spread they've had like ever in their program's history.
I think UConn scores a few points, but I for whatever reason, I would put money on Central Florida covering that line.
I would too, like, definitely, especially since UConn's offense, it seemed that earlier in the season they had something going. They've kind of like fallen off the past couple of weeks.
Right.
Like, they only scored 20 against Tulsa, like 12 against Missouri, and like 20 last week. It just seems like this is going to be a 56 to like 10 game.
Yeah, that's about, I think that's what I was going to have, but yeah, like around 50, 55 to like 7 or 14, something around there, yeah.
Or maybe UCF will just go all out and try to bury UConn, which would be fun as well.
Actually, that's a good point. I mean, knowing that they've been sitting at 18th for so long, I wonder if they do try to run it up to like 60, 70, or 80.
I don't know.
Scott Frost seems to have some integrity to him. I don't know if he would do that.
I don't think he'd go that far.
We'll see.
Interesting game. With only three games this week. One of them is Tulane in East Carolina. Like, who really cares? But the third,
we'll barely talk about them.
The third is SMU at Navy. Yeah, Navy a 4-point favorite, but speaking of falling off, they've really fallen off. They've lost three straight games.
Have you been watching Navy the last couple of weeks? What has happened to them?
Their defense just can't get off the field. Like, that's just what it seems like. Like, they couldn't do anything against Temple or USF or UCF, pardon. You know, like, in that Memphis game was a shootout. I don't know. It's like, if you can get Navy behind the sticks, like, you can beat them. They just seem very beatable lately.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, you're right. It's definitely the defense. They gave up 42. They gave up 32 to Cincinnati, gave up 45 to Air Force. They barely beat, by the way. 30 to Memphis, 31 to Central Florida, 34 to Temple, and that's the losing streak right there. That defense, wow. Which is, like, surprising because, you know, I mean, just by way of Navy running that really slow, methodical option, I mean, they burst one out for 40 or 50 now and then, but, like, they typically own the time of possession part of the box score. And it's surprising that, given the fact that they probably have at least a three to two ratio of, like, time of possession or something, they're still, like, giving up a ton of yards and points defensively. Like, that just shows how bad the defense is. Like, what would happen if, like, Temple or if Navy had, you know, like, the SMU offense or the Central Florida offense? Like, that defense would be giving up, like, 50 points a game.
It really would. Like, as you mentioned, like, 30 in their last four games. It's kind of unreal, like, how much they've been just completely exposed defensively. And, like, then they play, like, a team that's averaging, like, 40 points a game. So, I can't imagine, unless, like, these teams slow it down, there'll be any defense.
I'm actually surprised Navy's still favored. Like, I guess, I mean, they're at home. That's good for them. I mean, I feel like SMU's just playing so much better than Navy this week, and they've got the offense to outscore them. I mean, one of the ways you beat Navy, which is what we've seen the last couple of weeks, is you just have an offense that just forces Navy to do things outside of their comfort zone, which is play a quicker paced offense. And maybe that's just what Navy or SMU has to beat them this week, and that's kind of surprised that Navy was favored.
Yeah, I don't really get that one too much either. And SMU, if they lose, that pretty much like seals up the division for Memphis, because Houston has two losses. Memphis has the tiebreaker over them. Memphis only has two games left since they're off this week. So a very important game for the West Division. We got football out of the way. It's a basketball.
Yeah, let's get rid of that. Let's go to some more positive things.
It's the basketball eve. Of course, the season starts at noon on a Friday. Not exactly the most... Like,
It's the best. No, it's the best. It's awesome. I love it. It's like March Madness in November. Yeah. Scott, it's... I work in front of my computer 8 to 9 hours a day. This is amazing. Because I can have one screen sitting here watching Koops for 2 hours to distract me just enough to get not a lot of work done. It's fantastic.
Other hand, the game is against Savannah State, though. So you'll probably have the entire time to focus on your other computer after the first, after the first 15 minutes. I can't imagine this game is going to be remotely competitive, no matter how good it is to have basketball back.
Yeah, Savannah State, I believe, lost to... they lost to somebody that was not very good. I mean, they lost. Okay, they lost before. Yeah, they lost to Fort Valley State, 103-89. UC is going to win by about 60.
UC should definitely hang 100 on this team. It's one of those things where I wonder how hard they'll play for 40 minutes. Like, obviously, they'll play hard for the beginning part.
Right.
Like, at some point, they're going to, ease off the throttle. Like, that would be the difference between them scoring, 80 points and them scoring 100 points.
Yep.
That's the real watch for tomorrow, is are they going to score 100 points or merely 80 points? Which is, a good problem to have for once. I don't know how much of you've seen of the exhibition games, but, once this offense, kind of gets it going, they've been really impressive.
I have seen 0 minutes of the exhibition games because Bellarmine was not aired, and I totally forgot there's an exhibition game last Sunday, so I completely missed that. I think that's part of the reason why I'm so excited about this game tomorrow is because this will be my first live, my first time witnessing this team live, which is pretty exciting. Because from what I've heard is that Kane Broom looks the part. Jerron Cumberland is picking up right where he left off last year. Jacob Evans seems to be a little slow on the scoring front coming into the season, but hell, maybe that's just because he's giving some of the points over to Cumberland or whatever. I mean, the front court looks fine. Jennifer looks great. Keith Williams and Trevor Moore look awesome off the bench. Mamadou Diarra looks like a hoss down low. It looks like an exciting team. We've been talking about them for the last few weeks. I just have not seen them play, except for just highlights, which don't really tell you much.
Sosa May looks like a hoss on the post. Diarra, not so much.
Not a hoss, but I think he looks like someone who's going to be kind of like a guy to take over for Kyle Washington athletically down low. Yeah, that's what I meant.
Yeah.
Hoss was a poor choice.
Diarra is definitely not going to play this season. There's no way. That's my prediction for Diarra.
Actually, that is a good question. So
he only played 13 minutes in the exhibition games. There's no way he's making this rotation.
Right, and that's I think it makes sense to redshirt him. What about Sosa May?
I think that's an interesting one. I was at the Billerman game. I really liked what I saw from Sosa May, and then he followed it up with another solid game against whoever they played on Sunday. It's like
Embry Riddle, name you will not forget.
I'd like to see him get some run, but it seems like he's going to get a lot of the back of the bench run. Like Mick said, he wants to play 10 or 11 guys. It's like he could get a chance, but Mick saying he's going to play 10 guys just seems outrageous. Like an outrageous claim for him to make, considering they never have done that. Probably
no one plays 10 guys. No one does that.
Yeah, unless you have that Kentucky team from 5 years ago where they had two starting lineups, which nobody ever does.
Right.
But I think it's the back of the bench is the real question for minutes. That kind of I like more, but I guess he's got a nice shot, but it's kind of hard to see where he's actually going to figure in when you have guys playing 20-25 minutes a game. Because it seems like Cumberland and Evans and even Broom, those guys are going to get 25 to 30 minutes solid. And Jennifer is going to get his run. And of course Keith Williams is going to play a ton. It's really kind of kind of hard to see like where his minutes are really going to come from, like consistently. Like those are like the problems with your bench. Like, oh, we have so many interesting guys. It's a much better problem to face than like last year or the year before, where it's like, oh, we have
one.
Yeah, we have this many players and nobody coming off the bench.
Right. And I mean, your starters, I think, are guaranteed 25 to 30. And I think it's a 7-man rotation, because you're going to have your starters of Evans, Cumberland, Broom, Clark, and Kyle Washington. Then your first off the benches are probably going to be, you know, either Trey Scott or Nysir Brooks, and then Justin Jennifer. Beyond that, I think you're right. I don't think Diarra has a spot in the rotation. And then that's where it kind of brings me to Sosome. Like, if you're giving minutes to Brooks and Scott down low, I mean, can you really give many meaningful minutes to Sosome? Like, unless those guys get injured?
I
could see Williams and Moore coming in off the bench. Like, they've looked good enough in the exhibition games to give them minutes, and I think giving those guys minutes now makes sense. I don't know if giving minutes to Sosome and especially Diarra makes sense right now, given what you have in the rotation.
Yeah, it's going to be a really tough for like Sosome to get a ton of minutes. I kind of don't really see it happening. I think there's a chance he could get a redshirt too, because like you said, like Jennifer, he's going to get run. Like Williams is definitely going to play a ton. Like it seems like the coaching staff really likes him, and then you already have Scott and Brooks. Like, and Scott's looked pretty good. I know the competition is terrible, right?
Yeah.
For big men, because they're so much bigger and stronger, and like so much better than these other teams. Like, nothing against like Bellarmine or Embry Riddle. Like, they just don't have anybody who can guard those guys who are just taller.
No, because those teams play like five guards. I mean, that's what they do. That's how they compete.
But,
yeah, you're right. I mean, it's hard to judge them on competition, but I mean, up until this point, you have a 4-man rotation underneath with Washington and Clark starting, then, you know, Trey Scott and Nysir Brooks coming off the bench. Diarra definitely doesn't fit in there just because he wouldn't get any meaningful minutes. I don't know if you have a fifth option down low for Sosome to fill, especially if those four are playing meaningful minutes and don't get hurt. Like, it almost makes sense just to throw a redshirt on him now, and then if you have to play him because of injury, you just play him. But it might just not be necessary. I just don't know what the coaching staff has communicated.
I don't know. Yeah, that's a tough one, because it seems like the 11th guy on the bench, like, once conference play starts, like, he's definitely not going to play a ton unless he, like, earns his minutes, which, like, he very well could. Even then, like, you could argue he's not even the 11th guy on the bench, because you still have more. Like, he would be down, like, your 12th guy on the bench. So, like, the question becomes, like, do you need three bigs off your bench? Like, I guess maybe. But I don't know. It's an interesting look at, like, roster construction.
But that's the thing, is, like, if you're playing the type of offense that you intend to play with Broom, which is the quicker transition type of offense, I still think Williams and Moore come off the bench a lot faster than Sosome. I don't know.
I do, too. Like, the only backup big who played, like, none of them played, like, every game. But Scott played 35 games, Brooks played 33 games, and I come... I'm pretty sure Moore was injured, but he only played 27 games. It's like, I don't. Maybe you just don't need that extra guy. You just can't play four guards. I mean, you have the size to do it with Evans and Cumberland. You can just play stretch like that with Washington or Clark at center. So I kind of think both of those guys might end up redshirted, and like you just roll with like Moore as your 11th man.
Yeah, I mean. Yeah, I think that makes most sense. I mean, the good news is that, you know, you're coming into a season where your starters are set. You don't have a hole offensively or defensively. I mean, defensively, potentially Cumberland, you know, if he's gotten better in that regard. For the most part, you don't have a hole offensively there. So you don't really need to have a deeper bench. You know, you don't need to have, you're probably not going to be looking for minutes off of the bench, just because you should be getting pretty efficient minutes from your starting five plus Justin Jennifer and the two big coming off the bench. Yeah, so definitely. Yeah,
it's much better to have like that those the kind of conversations than like, oh man, where's the scoring going to come from? Because
right.
There's so many options for points. Like it's like offensively, this is the best team Vernon's had. Like, who's your weak spot on offense? It's like Gary Clark, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, maybe. Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. Like, it's Gary Clark only because he passes the ball so much and does everything else right, and he might just not take over like you'd see from other guys. But I mean, that's essentially just because everybody else can score too. Like it doesn't. He's only a relative weakness, but he would still be he's still an excellent player.
Yeah, like if he's like your worst offensive player, use the air quotes for worst. Like,
right.
That's a great problem to have because we've seen him have. Obviously, we've seen him play great, and he's very good offensively. Like he passes well, and he kills the glass, and he can score, and he's like stepped out to like shoot the threes. Like the whole lineup can shoot the three ball, which like maybe sometimes you don't want like Clark and Washington taking those shots, but like it's just a dangerous team with so many moving parts, and like it's only been exhibition games. Seeing them like really push, especially like when Broom's on the floor, like he really pushes the pace. Like that's been fun to watch. That's true. Like you have guys who can finish like Cumberland and like Williams and Evans. Yeah, it's just going to be a really fun team to watch. And I hope that they do keep up with the pace like they've played in the exhibition games. Which, Rick, really, take those with a grain of salt. Because, like, you see, he's not going to shoot 58% like in every game. But, I don't know, it's just been, like, so much fun to watch them, like, get out and, like, push the pace and, like, run in transition. Like, the guys seem to be having, like, a ton of fun, like, playing with each other. Which is like always just great to watch as a fan.
Yeah, and that's the thing is like this. When coming into the season, folks were worried that Broom was going to potentially struggle from being you know the offensive threat, you know the guy to always take the shots, to being able to change his mindset to distribute the ball a little more. And it sounds like he's adapted that really seamlessly, and that's just. That's just only made the team more cohesive because you go from Troy Copain, who was a pass-first kind of point guard, to a Cain Broom, who was a shoot-first kind of point guard, and it seems like the transition has become so much more seamless than anyone could have hoped for, which is really encouraging down the stretch. I mean, if you're going to... You're basically getting the kind of mindset out of Cain Broom that Troy Copain had, but with a little more ability and drive offensively.
Yeah, to 8 assists, the 3 turnovers in the 2 exhibition games. Like the only thing Broom really hadn't scored shown is his scoring. He just had a couple of rough shooting games. Like, and that's the one thing like we knew he was like good at just coming in. We could see his points per game and his shooting percentages.
Yeah, but that's the thing is that the coach is basically saying, hey, this is an exhibition game. These games don't count. Why don't you try passing the ball first before shooting it? Just you know, work on that. Use this as a glorified practice to work on the weaker areas of your game.
I don't know because he's shot 3 for 12. It's not like he's taken.
That's true. That's true. Yeah, that's true. He's not really taking a shot off. Okay.
Well, he has taken a bit of a backseat like that and really gotten, especially in the half court. Doesn't seem like he's done a ton in the half court. Like it seems like when he scores, he's the one who scores in transition. I think that's a good point. Like he's trying to be more of a facilitator, and it just seems like this team is really like loaded with that because you have Evans who can also run the point like he did like quite a bit last year, and obviously Jennifer like whenever he gets in the game like he had a lot of assists against Emery Riddle, was that their name? Yes, like he had 9 assists. So like just seeing what Jennifer can do. Like in like a faster pace, like getting some like guaranteed run. is also interesting because I like to see like how he does with the starters. Like him and Williams, like as a bench unit, did look pretty solid. Williams just looks really, I don't know. It's like easy to get enamored with Williams. Like he's the type of player they just doesn't seem like they've had for a while.
Yeah, he and Moore can shoot from anywhere, which is like, oh great, we get four more years of that, and they're only going to get better as they get more experience. Like I think that's what makes it most exciting for me. And then you're talking about, you know, okay, you just signed, you know, a point guard Logan Johnson yesterday, who has the exact same mindset, and it seems like the rock fight, mud fight, whatever you want to call it, type of slow pace, low scoring offenses are finally in the past and behind us, and we're, you know, the future starts now with this kind of offense going forward.
Yeah, it's like been. It's been interesting to see like Mick Cronin just like change like the DNA kind of like his recruiting and like the type of teams that they've had. Because it's slowly like faded. Like ever since like we've been doing the podcast the last few years, like you can see like the evolution of like what type of players they want and like what type of things they want to do. Now obviously, like exhibition games, the games against like Savannah State and whoever else garbage teams they play to start the season, are gonna tell us a ton until like they get down to, like the Cayman Islands or wherever the hell they play for that tournament.
Right.
But it just seems like this team has a lot more offensive talent. Like they're like KenPom top 20 offense, which is like kind of amazing.
Like when was the last time that happened? Ever? Like, been a while.
Yeah. And, like, their defense, like, hopefully that stays at the elite level. Like, this should be a very good team.
Yeah. And that's the thing is, like, when we're talking about this team, like, it's easy to get drawn in by all the possibilities of what the season could unfold for all of us, but there's not a lot to talk about, like, weakness-wise. Like, they don't know who their eighth or ninth man off the bench is. Who cares? Like, they might play a little worse defense this year and give up a little more points just because they're playing at a faster pace and scoring quicker. Who cares? Like, I don't know. What's another potential weakness? Who knows if Jerome Cumberland is going to play better defensively this season than he did last season? Again, who cares? He scores 20 points a game. Like, I'd want to always temper my expectations, but it's hard not to.
I guess the biggest question would be, like, you have so much inexperience, like, coming off the bench. Like, unless they juggle their lineups and, like, they have starters on the floor the whole time. Like, there's obviously, like, Williams, Moore, like, those guys are new. Like, Brooks and Scott both played last year, but like, they didn't get, like, a ton of run. And, like, Jennifer's been, like, kind of inconsistent with his, like, minutes his whole career. It's, like, I guess, like, from that just standpoint, it's, like, you kind of have to see what you have in your bench. But like you said, it's, like, kind of hard to imagine a scenario where, like, all five of those guys would be on the floor at the same time. And, I don't know, like, where this team just doesn't have, like, the horses to, like, really go out and, like, get buckets or at least get stops. It's just going to be this, like, same things for every team. Like, how consistent can you be? Like, possession to possession. Like every elite team, like, goes through those problems. And, like, they play a really tough non-conference schedule for a Cincinnati team, which is another, like, good thing to see. Especially since, like, the back half of your league schedule is just, like, loaded. Like, it's going to be a really fun season. And
it will be, yeah.
And, like, this is just going to be a fun team to watch. Like, seeing up in person, it was pretty exciting. And, I know we have to, like, tone down, like, the hype train, like, a little bit. But like, watching them destroy the first three teams, like, they play, unless, like, somebody gets hurt, like, it's just going to be too much fun.
Oh, yeah.
We have to enjoy these, like, 100-point wins while we can.
Yeah, and that's the thing is, I feel like every season we talk about, you know, the offense is going to be better than the previous season, but they're already proving the offense look better, look faster, look like they're going to score more points and be more efficient. And they're probably going to blow through the schedule until they hit the Cayman Islands Classic. I mean, the biggest question is, we're not going to see 100-point games out of this offense against Xavier or Florida or UCLA, but are they going to be up in the 70s and 80s? Or are they going to float down to the 60s? Like, I think that's the biggest question I have. I mean, this team is more than capable of, you know, no matter the season, blowing out a Savannah State or Western Carolina. But what are they going to do against the top competition? Is the offense going to fall off a little bit, a lot? Are they going to have non-existent offense? Is it going to be slow-paced and, you know, shooting at 30% from the field or something like that? Like, what is it going to look like?
Like, those are really the only types of questions we can ask once they start playing the games.
Right, right. So
I guess, like, your other thing could be, like, free throw shooting hasn't been, like, incredibly...
True, that's a big one.
Great so far. Like, obviously, it's a really small sample, but, like, 57% and 60%. The three-point shooting could also be, like, a little bit of a thing, because, like, if we know, like, the guys can shoot it, can they make it consistently? I guess is another question.
Uh-huh.
Like, I don't, it's like, this is the type of team where, like, you just feel good against anybody, and we definitely couldn't say that last year, because, like, nobody really felt good about them playing UCLA, and, like, this year it seems like if they played, like, Villanova or one of the blue bloods, like Kentucky, Arizona, it's like, bring it on.
Yeah.
Like, Wichita State, like, bring it on. Let's go. It's like a kind of a shame we have to wait so long in the season for that. But, like, it's going to just be a season that really should be, I've said fun a lot, but I'm really looking forward to seeing, like, this team in action.
Yeah, and that's, yeah, and the AAC absolutely set up the schedule to put Wichita State and Cincinnati in the back half for a very specific reason. And that's the thing, is it's like, I think you made a great point there, is like, I don't want to say, like, we as fans were a little worrisome going into those big games against, you know, really name schools that have been very good for so long, like UC has, but has, obviously Cincinnati has fallen off, you know, after Huggins left and Mick had to rebuild the thing from scratch. But, like, yeah, like, going into the season, like, is any UC fan afraid of any team on this schedule? I don't think so. Like, you're right. Like, all of us were a little worrisome going into playing UCLA and Lonzo Ball in the tournament. Not this year. Yeah, I mean, same with Florida, same with Xavier, same with Wichita State. Like, this team could go, you know, undefeated throughout the stretch, and no one would be particularly surprised. I don't think it's going to happen, but they have the ability to win every single one of these games, and that's what's most exciting to me.
Yeah, because you have a team like Florida that's like a KenPom top 10 team, and, like, it just seems like in the past we'd, like, look at the schedule, like, oh man, that's going to be, like, that one just kind of looks like it would be a loss. But, like, now you're like, oh, that should be a fun, exciting game. Like,
right.
Like, we really get to learn about this team. Like, even, like, playing the shootout at Xavier is like, oh, it's like you've always been, like, oh, man. But, like, now it's like, oh, like, we could definitely go into Xavier and, like, pull out a win there. And, like, I don't know. It's just, like, really exciting. Like, those, like, three big games, like Xavier, Florida, UCLA, like, none of them are at home. Like, I guess they're all road games, even though one's neutral, the Florida game. It's like they have a chance to win all those games, and I don't know. It's just fun.
Yeah. The possibilities are, I mean, the ceiling's pretty damn high for this team. I think Lenardi or Jerry Palm has him as a 3 seed so far. I mean, that's probably about right for this part of the season, but hell, they could climb into a 1 at some point. Depending on how things, you know, bounce their way, they could fall as low as 6 or 7. I mean, The thing is that I don't think anyone coming into last season thought this team could be any higher than a 3 seed. At this point, their average is probably about a 3.
Yeah, I think that's about right.
So, should be a fun year. And it starts tomorrow night? Tomorrow at noon. exciting.
You already forgot about the exciting noon game. A new game that's on TV, so it's just not an internet-only game, like a game 2 against Western Carolina.
Yep, Fox Sports Ohio, but you can watch on ESPN3 if you have the ability, which I do. Exciting.
So do you have any words of wisdom before we close this podcast?
Nope, nothing. Let's hope UC goes undefeated in football and basketball this weekend, especially football. And actually, especially basketball. Actually, both.
Yeah, they have the Friday sweep.